And we're back. Joining us in the studio is Julie Turnock. She's a professor of cinema studies at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. And Austin McCann is general manager of the Art Theater Co-op in downtown Champaign. They join us. Thanks to both of you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
I want to talk a bit about some other themes related to the Oscars. First, we'll talk about Life Itself, the Roger Ebert documentary. It had a lot of popularity in this region, Roger Ebert's hometown. Yet, despite all the buzz, not nominated for a Best Documentary Oscar. There was a formalized Oscar campaign for this movie. It made a short list of the top 15 that were nominated to be nominated for an Oscar. But director Steve James has also had a history of not being nominated. Like each of you, I guess first Austin to weigh in on why you feel it didn't make the final list.
I'm not sure that I have a clear reason why Life Itself wouldn't be nominated for Best Documentary. There was a piece in the Sun-Times considering the possibility of maybe the documentary committee just thought that the other five films were better. I don't feel that way about this documentary lineup. I know Hoop Dreams was one of the biggest controversies in Oscar history, prompting them to completely change the way that movies got nominated in the documentary category so they would actually have documentary filmmakers on there. Roger Ebert wrote a great piece at the time, basically accusing the Academy of being less interested in cinema verite or documentaries that are filming events as they're happening rather than the past tense talking head style of documentary that year. But anybody who's familiar with the work of Steve James found this a huge shock. The response to Life Itself is overwhelmingly positive. I personally can't account for it.
Is there an argument that Steve James doesn't need a nomination? I think you've come up with a list of some of the top documentary filmmakers around the country, the top five. He'd probably be on the list. And maybe he's getting more attention because he wasn't nominated.
For me, this is an ongoing question of what significance do we want the Oscars to have? For me, it's less about feeling that the Oscars are in tune with aesthetic quality and more in terms of how does it move resources towards those filmmakers who are awarded Oscars. So for Steve James, who turned out Hoop Dreams, The Interrupters, Life Itself, and keeps not getting nominated, clearly his films are getting out there, they're finding an audience, but it would always be good to see what these filmmakers were able to do if they would have the complete amount of resources at their disposal.
Julie, what were your thoughts on the snub of Life Itself?
I agree with Austin. I saw the film at Ebert Fest this last year and really enjoyed it. Thought it was a really excellently made documentary, very affecting. It's in good company, though. The Academy has a strange, long history of not nominating the most well-known and popular documentaries of the year, and I don't really have a reason behind why that happens. On one hand, you know, the Oscars mean more prestige for these filmmakers, and it matters from that point of view. But at the same time, there may be an upside to the controversy of not having been nominated and getting more attention to the work through the controversy that it wasn't nominated.
Selma might be in that same case as well.
Right.
We'll the conversation.
We'll have to touch on Selma as well. Is there any chance that the Academy is getting back at Roger Ebert for bad reviews?
Maybe.
I wouldn't be able to comment on that.
But I mean, the Oscars, some of those snubs seem a little petty, but it's hard for us to know because Julie and I are not members of the Academy.
And you look at the list of documentary nominees. You have Citizen Four about Edward Snowden, Vibing Vivian Mayer. We'll get to that in a moment. And Last Days of Vietnam, Virunga, a movie about guerrillas. I mean, in the past years, the movies that have won Best Documentary, you have historical context, maybe international cybersecurity issues, those kinds of things. Is there a chance that the themes of these movies are the reason Life Itself got shut out, that we're looking for something more significant?
Citizen Four is an amazing film, so I understand that one being nominated, but it's hard. I mean, Steve James, when interviewed recently, was saying the documentary is no longer a marginal film, so the fact that we're also being forced to choose between five films is a little arbitrary, considering Best Picture can go up to 10. The documentary, to me, is kind of an unstable format. People aren't sure what makes a good documentary, and in the way that people are more familiar talking about what makes a good film for a narrative feature. So, yeah, I'm not sure.
Well, we're going to turn to one of the other documentary films lucky enough to receive a nomination. Just mentioned it a moment ago. Finding Vivian Mayer tells the story of a Chicago-based nanny who kept her incredible skill as a photographer secret, and we only discovered her photos after John Maloof purchased many of them at a storage locker sale. Austin, I understand you're not much of a fan of the film.
I think Vivian Mayer's work is amazing. The puzzle documentary, this is a certain kind of popular documentary. For me, these are films that remind me a lot of a story you can hear on Radiolab. And basically, there's a kind of narrative which you are being given, and there are little clues that you're being given throughout the film. So in Finding Vivian Mayer, What the film is about, and this is coming out in the lawsuits that you're seeing about the film, is where does value come from in art? Because the question, this is another one of these reclusive genius films. Vivian Maier took these amazing photographs. Why didn't she want to put her work out there and claim her status as one of the great photographers of the 20th century? But the strangeness and the pettiness and the power that's evident in the art market and the art world that comes through in that film, I think, answers more questions than the movie is really willing to contend with. And comparing that film to Life Itself, I just find Finding Vivian Maier to be a more shallow film. It's something that I watched, I enjoyed, but at the end, I'm not sure that it's going to be a film that we are going to return to continually want to unravel what it means for the medium and what it means for the subjects in the story.
Selma played at the Art Theater. I want to start with you, Julia. I mean, what were your thoughts when it only turned up with nominations for Picture and Best Song?
I was surprised on one hand, but on the other hand, Ava DuVernay doesn't have a long track record with the Academy, and oftentimes there's a sense that you're working your way up into being considered for Oscars. For example, like the Coen brothers start small and then they eventually have enough attention. At the same time, it is a long-standing problem with the Academy that, you know, they're in fact working within their own ranks to try to deal with the kind of problem of diversity within the Academy votership. I've got a few numbers here that, and this is from 2012, so they're not going to be exactly correct, but 94% of the Academy is white, 77% of the Academy is male, and 54% of the Academy is over the age of 60. And so that tends to skew the voting in certain directions. Also, 20% of the Academy is the actors branch. The kind of movies that awards tend to be ones that play to that demographic. And it's not to say that Selma doesn't play to that demographic, but I think, and also there's been a lot of press about how Paramount, I mean, it's a studio film, it's not an independent film, how Paramount's, the studio, mishandled its Academy campaign, that they didn't send screeners for the Guild Awards, but only for the Oscars and maybe one other of the major awards, I think the Golden Globes. And so it's hard to tell whether it is a kind of purposeful snub, and to what extent it was a kind of mishandling of the Oscar campaign.
Julie, Cheryl Boone Isaacs is now head of the Academy. We have African-American woman. You know, what does that say?
It says that the Academy is really concerned about their image, and they should be. And so I think it's a positive step forward for the Academy to acknowledge that they have this kind of demographic problem. And even if it's maybe cosmetic at this point, I think she's a fine leader for the Academy. But it's important that they know that there is a problem with perception.
So we've been talking about who it is that we're seeing on screen, and the question of particularly the growing Chinese film market is very significant. But the fact that movies are making a huge amount of money in China doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to be seeing non-white people on screen. You know,
that's for sure.
The Romanian film, I mean, in Romania, they are turning out like masterpiece after masterpiece in that country. But those movies are mostly being seen in art houses in New York and L.A. You know, in a lot of other countries, what they want to see is Iron Man. They want to see these big movie explosions. Now they're having these, I think, really chauvinistic discussions about, well, you know, are non-American countries ready for a female-led Ghostbusters? So there are growing demographics. I mean, there's a huge Latin American and Latino population growing in the United States. I think that, you know, the National Association of Theater Owners, who they manage the multiplexes, they're trying to figure out who is this audience and what kind of movies do they want to see. But that, combined with the fact of overseas, you know, the huge amounts of revenue that they're seeing generated by movies like Iron Man, I think is interesting to see what is going to be funded going forward. I don't particularly have a lot of hope for it that we're going to be seeing better films coming out of it. My sense is more that we're going to be going more and more towards monolithic, big budget action movies and then the independent stuff that, you know, obviously is our lifeblood. And by our, I mean the art theater is going to be increasingly on television. Mm-hmm. I think it's a weird moment in the industry, and I'm not trying to sound a death of cinema null or anything, but I know that those are growing concerns that we have not yet figured out.
Well, and the economics of the situation are stark, unfortunately. When there was the controversy over Ridley Scott's Exodus for not having ethnically appropriate actors, all white stars, Ridley Scott said in an un-PC way, I can't cast an unknown actor in this role. It won't play anywhere. I need these big stars for it to play around the world. And it's unfortunate that it's true, that it's a vicious cycle because they don't try to cast anything but stars for these kind of big blockbuster roles, then the perception is that they can't. And same with if you don't have a female director with a track record for making big blockbusters, they think women can't direct big blockbusters. And so it's a vicious circle of replicating what has succeeded in the past.
This was an interesting question for me, too, with Selma, because I would say largely due to Ava having a greatly reduced budget compared to what a different director would get, she had a lesser-known cast, which I think actually benefited the film in a lot of ways. She has a really strong relationship with David Oyelowo, who was in Middle of Nowhere, the really beautiful film she released before Selma, and they're working on projects going forward. The one complaint I heard from people at the Art about Selma was that they found the presence of Oprah a little distracting.
But Oprah was great in it,
I said,
actually.
Hey, yeah, and, you know, I mean, despite what you think about it, she's the executive producer on that thing. Oprah Winfrey is making things happen for Ava DuVernay, so we can give her this one. I think, yeah, it's a question, too, of, like, how the director is seeing their limitations. Like, do I want this film to have the biggest audience possible, making the most money possible, or what kind, or do I want an appropriate representation that won't be distracting from the story that we're telling? And I'm not saying what they should decide there. I just know those are concerns for different directors.
The criticisms of how Lyndon Johnson characterized, questionable whether he said some of the things he did and what happened at that period, would that hurt the film at all?
Well, I agree with Ava DuVernay that she's being held to a level of truth that other filmmakers have not been. Also, I mean, there's a lot of unpleasant historical material about Lyndon Johnson out there in the world, and it was a pretty respectful characterization as far as I was concerned. If she wanted to characterize him as a villain, she had historical material to use to do that. She is as free to make artistic license as anyone else.
I agree with, you know, what great commentators have been saying, that this is a film about a black social movement that made social change happen in the United States, and that a lot of white people got really uncomfortable with that. What this film showed is that Lyndon B. Johnson did the right thing after he was forced to by a black social movement. Selma is much more an on-the-ground, these are the people doing the work, this is what they look like, and you're going to have a much more contentious relationship with power. Selma was a huge hit for us. People were very moved by it. I understand there could be a lot of reasons why Selma would be left out. The powerful thing for me was seeing how moved people were to critique when Selma was snubbed, particularly the inclusion of the even aesthetically problematic film American Sniper. For me, it was very powerful to see people being moved by this because I saw them genuinely wanting different kinds of representations on screen than they normally have access to and wanting those to be rewarded. The pain that I saw was very touching to me because I also got to see, oh, this is still a medium that people are invested in. And there is still some space for significance for us when we're talking about film. And I saw that unlike previous years with the Oscars, this was a very political discussion this year, which I think is good for the art form.
Well, this brings up another topic, and the lack of roles for women. A lot of people like the performance of Reese Witherspoon in Wild. Difficult for women as they become 30 and older to find roles or roles that maybe the Oscar deems worthy of nomination.
And Tina Fey and Amy Poehler's joke at the Golden Globe I thought was so good about Patricia Arquette in Boyhood, proving there's still great roles for women over 40 as long as they're hired when they're under 40.
Or for roles for people who aren't Meryl Streep. Mm-hmm. Meryl Streep's over 40. You know, so bringing in Ava DuVernay as a perceived snub in the director's category, so is Angelina Jolie, for that matter, for Unbroken, which, whether you like the movie or not, it's a very typical Oscar-type story, and actors who go the directorial route are very frequently awarded by Oscar. And so we're talking about Oscars, but at the same time, you know, we have to advocate as consumers as well. So we have to go to the movies and pay and vote with our wallet and go see movies by Ava DuVernay and Angelina Jolie and other non-traditional filmmakers.
It's been documented that Reese Witherspoon had to form a production company in order to make the film that she wanted to see made, and it's something that, certainly not a glamorous role that she got a lot of praise for.
I don't know that much specifically about that particular example, but I do know that a lot of actresses, especially both for TV and in film, are forced to kind of take things into their own hand in order to find roles for themselves. That especially, I think we've already mentioned, once you get out of the ingenue or girlfriend age bracket, which is pretty young in Hollywood, it's you hit 35 and you're starting to lose out to younger actresses, that this is what Drew Barrymore has done. This is what Angelina Jolie has done, and lots of Hollywood actresses.
I would just say, in terms of representation, too, it feels to me like this is the year that the Bechdel test is more breaking out into the mainstream. And the Bechdel test, named after the great MacArthur Genius Prize award-winning cartoonist, author Alison Bechdel, that's a way of basically gauging the quality of representation of women in a film or TV. And I'm trying to remember what they specifically are. You have to have two characters who are women, who have names, who talk to one another about something besides men. And this isn't an objective thing necessarily, because you can dispute, like, well, does that character really have a name or not? They might have a name in the credits, but does anybody use it?
Iron Man 3 passes the Bechdel test, actually.
Okay, so like, so it's not like necessarily a stamp of this is, you know, a revolutionary feminist film, but I think it's a good way for people to start thinking about representations of people who have historically been marginalized in at least American film, which is everybody but straight white men.
I'm also thinking about another common trend in the industry is movies that we see in the nominations are released late in the year. And if you look at what's playing right now with multiplexes, it's they catch up on some Oscar-nominated material and then a lot of January, February releases that, quite frankly, aren't very good. Is this a problem, though, if you release one of the really good movies early in the year?
I think that's objectively the case, that, you know, movies that are coming out starting in November. I mean, at the Art Theater, we know that is Oscar season. Even January tends to be Oscar season for us. Now, this year has some huge exceptions with Grand Budapest, which came out in March, and Boyhood, which came out, in, I think, early in the summer. But, you know, IFC knows when they're releasing Boyhood. We are hurting this film's chances releasing it at this point, even though Boyhood was kind of an unstoppable force.
You know, over and over again, we talk about how this is an issue and nothing real changes. Is there any expectations we'll see? Is Oscar season always going to be Oscar season year?
Well, I mean, it has already changed to a certain degree. I guess what you're asking is whether movies will be recognized by the Academy, released at different times of year. But it's interesting to me that March and April, especially, are starting to turn into big release times of the year, both for what we might call less traditional blockbusters like the Hunger Games franchise, for example, or Twilight franchise, but also Scorsese films have been coming out, like Shutter Island, I think, came out in March or something of its year, just as an example. And so the release schedule, because the summer season is so tight with blockbusters, and you've got blockbusters that are scheduled for every weekend of the summer for the next several years already. Now, in order to find an audience, film the studios and the independents are finding other times to release throughout the year.
There's never a shortage of great movies, ever. There's always a great film that I haven't played that is a new release. The question is there an audience for it or not? Maybe the really mainstream big budget films that are coming out, and far be it from me to have a critique of 50 Shades of Grey, that might be the case, but there's always great films out there. It's just a matter of the conversation about movies that is mostly being promulgated by the corporate media. What are they saying is significant and what are they saying is insignificant? And from a programming standpoint, how can I convince our audience, hey, seeing a movie in April is just as good as seeing one in December?
Is there any chance we can vote with our dollars? Will making a point to go see movies help?
It's generally credited with Spike Lee that the only important color in Hollywood is green. And so if we want to see Ava DuVernay, for example, make more movies, we have to support her with our dollars. Or if we want to see more diversity in filmmaking, you know, it's the movie business and, you know, business keeps it going. So I don't know if it will sway awards, but it will certainly sway what is being made, because Hollywood follows success with replication.
Something I want to touch on here, talked about the business, and the Illinois Film Office recently changed directors. Political appointee from Governor Bruce Rauner, the director is now Christine Dudley. Bessie Steinberg is out. Dudley is a longtime Republican political consultant. It's the first purely political appointment that the office has seen. I mean, under Becky Steinberg, we had projects shot around Chicago like Transformers, The Dark Knight, and the TV show Empire. Any thoughts? I mean, there's been a little film work in Champaign. Any thoughts from either of you about the future of Illinois' prominence and being a place to come shoot films, Chicago or otherwise?
Yeah, I can say that it has been a really fruitful time under the previous Ms. Steinberg. And so it would be a shame if things didn't keep going in the same direction.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think Chicago's a great location for big budget films, and it's been great to see that city be used for that. And I know it's a great revenue generator, but let's just see what happens with this appointee.
All right. Well, Austin McCann, General Manager of the Art Theater Co-op in Champaign, Julie Turnock, Professor of Cinema Studies at the U of I. Thanks, both of you, for joining us today.
Thanks.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a WILO radio special, Illinois at the Oscars. Today's program was produced by Amanda Huntingfort with help from Jason Croft and Scott Cameron. Thanks for listening. I'm Jeff Bossert.